Welcome to Mind the Gap by Fresh Chat, a podcast where experts and hustlers share their stories on growth, marketing, and customer experience. I'm Abhishek, and I'm your host for the day. You might have listened to an expert. Have you listened to an expert who has interviewed 100 of them? Dan, who we have on the show today, is the host and founder of Evolving SEO. He's been an SEO expert since the time of dinosaurs. Welcome to the show, Dan. So you've been around in the SEO since about 2007, probably the time when even Yahoo was relevant, right? And how has the SEO ride been so far? And what are the biggest changes that you've seen in the last 11 years?
It's been super interesting. I think I can highlight two monumental changes in SEO since that time. One was really around the 2012-2013 period. And that's when Google got really aggressive with handling the web span problem and site quality problems. That's when you saw the Panda update and the Penguin update. And that was the one pendulum switch in one direction towards content marketing and away from link building. And then since that time, the next biggest switch has really gone back in the other direction, where now technical SEO is a huge deal now. And it's very on the forefront of people's minds and really, really key and popular, and it gets a lot of attention. And so there's just been a guy by the name of Mike King, he goes by iPullRank, he kind of predicted in a way what he called the technical SEO renaissance. It was based off a post he wrote almost 2 years ago, I think, where he saw this resurgence in the interest of technical SEO. And that's just really like how the landscape is today.
Lovely. Would you want to talk a bit about Mike's post here?
Yeah. So Mike is, first and foremost, he has a development background. So he can see these things that are on the horizon when it comes to SEO. And so he can also understand these things too. So nowadays, Google is known for trying as best as they can, although they don't always get it right, to crawl through JavaScript and understand what a website that's rendering in JavaScript might look like. They try to crawl through that content. They try to crawl through any links that they can. So Mike's post, it's on Moz.com, on the Moz blog. It's called The Technical SEO Renaissance. And he really just spelled out a lot of things that were and are still very important in the world of SEO now, such as analyzing log files, being able to analyze a website that is being rendered in JavaScript and figure out if Google is accessing that content or not. And so I just recommend all the listeners to go check out that post, because not only is it really a predictive post, but it's also an educational post where he walks you through a lot of fundamental and advanced technical SEO elements.
Lovely. I'm going to find this blog post and probably link it down on the podcast here for the listeners. Dan, I was reading about the seven beliefs that you have for SEO, and one of it stood out for me. This is about doing it for SEO and for something else. Most businesses today are building pages just for SEO, but I think SEO is more than that. You can't build a page for SEO. You add value and SEO follows. What's your take on this?
Yeah, so I'll tell a quick anecdotal story. So I had a client recently that came to me, and we were working on a project together, and they were posting 10 blog posts a week for like a year or 2 years, which when you do the math, I'm not super fast at math, but that's hundreds and hundreds of blog posts. And I think they had like 1,500 blog posts. And the only reason they could give me they were doing this was that it's quote unquote working for our SEO. There was no other reason. There was no marketing reason, no business reason, no social media marketing reason, just nothing. They just thought it was this thing that worked for SEO. But the problem with that is that sort of activity actually can hurt your SEO in the long run, because Google looks at the overall slices of pie that you have for content, and they are looking at what's the percentage of content that you have that is high quality versus low quality, that is short versus long, that's written for search engines versus actually written for human beings. And so this was a problem where they were applying a tactic only for SEO because they only thought it would help their rankings. And there was no other marketing or business reason for it. And so that's what I mean in my page online, evolvingseo.com/approach, where I have a simple little Venn diagram. And I just say, anything that you're doing as an SEO tactic, it needs to have some sort of other meaning or purpose behind it. whether that's marketing or business or it overlaps with branding or PPC, you can't just do something because you think it's going to help your SEO. That's just a recipe for disaster usually. And I'll give you an example. So I have a client called healthyhearing.com. I've been with them for almost 6 years now. I first met them in the Moz forum like long ago, like 6 years feels like forever now. But they've ranked number one for hearing aids, which has over 200,000 searches a month. They've ranked number one for that for like 18 months now. It was never our sole intent to rank number one for that. Our intent was to build a body of content that truly helped people that were searching around topics like hearing aids, hearing loss, ringing in your ears. Does Medicare cover, you know, hearing aids and hearing appointments? That was our intent. And then what happened as a result was now they're ranking for this super high, very coveted keyword. And so I think that's a great story, I think, of how you can do something for the user, but then it helps your search rankings.
For listeners who do not know, Dan hosts a podcast called Evolving SEO. You should go and check it out. Dan, getting back to my question, what do you think are the major things that SEO analysts miss today?
I've always pictured myself as a little outside of the industry to a certain extent. Like I don't necessarily relate. I relate to SEOs in the sense that we all love SEO, but I haven't always fit in where it's not my ultimate passion, let's say. I went to school for music, so, and my dad's a sculptor. So I have a very much of a content creator, artistic, creative sort of, you know, background. That's really my passion. And I view SEO as a mechanism to get you to something. It's a mechanism that helps you achieve a result, whether that's a marketing result or a business result. So the thing I think most SEO practitioners miss is they're tunnel visioned, and they often don't lift their head up from their desk, so to speak, and see the big picture. And I think that's a strength and an asset that all SEO practitioners should always try to maintain. You should always try to see the big picture of things and where SEO fits into what it is you're doing, and how does the SEO tactic or the technical SEO thing or site speed or whatever it is help the SEO specifically. So that's the thing I think I see that SEO practitioners miss the most, is just not stepping back and looking 30,000 feet above and seeing the holistic picture.
Well, I love that, because I think at least in the industry, most SEO experts look at them as enablers of content, enablers of marketing. But looking at it holistically, yeah, I think this goes down to your idea of do it for SEO and for something else. I think there's a business sense to everything. I think if all SEO, or everybody who is doing SEO, aligns in a certain way that they look at it holistically, I think everybody will not look at them as SEO expert, but business experts.
Yeah, and I think it helps give you empathy. So when you go into a client's office and you're talking to their developer, or you're talking to the CEO, or you're talking to the marketer or the PPC person, it's like you don't want to get too much talking about all the geeky SEO talk, like domain authority and, you know, crawled links and follow and no follow and, you know, time to first byte and all this stuff, because you want to like talk the language and see the perspective of whoever it is that you're trying to communicate with. And I don't always get that right. I think it's easy to fall into your tunnel vision trap and talk about, you know, the little SEO mechanics. But I think it helps give you that perspective to communicate with clients better as well.
Search ecosystem optimization. You probably coined that word. I think you're talking here about digital, real, and search world all talking the same language. Can you talk a little bit about it, on what you mean by search ecosystem optimization here?
Sure. This term, you know, I use it for myself. I haven't tried to really promote it, you know, to try to like make a name for it or something. But it really came out of a frustration when I looked at, if you do advertising, you do PPC, or you do social media marketing, or you do anything else besides SEO in a marketing or advertising realm, the name of what you do describes either what it is you do or where you do it or the result that it achieves. The term SEO to me has always been, it doesn't actually describe what you do. So what we're talking about here is having an accurate mental model or an accurate map of what you do. And so if I wanted you to work on cars and I called and I said, you know, you're a mechanic, you're going to work on cars, but then I called you a engine optimizer, and the pun is not really intended there, but it doesn't give you the full perspective of like, well, you might be working on the brakes or like the, you know, like the electronics or something else that's not the engine. So it gives you a very narrow mental model of what's actually happening out there. And so I sat back and I said, well, what does an SEO really do? Because when we are, for example, making a site more mobile friendly, we're not optimizing a search engine. We're helping a client develop a mobile website so search engines can access that and that it becomes more mobile friendly for search engines and users. So that's when, if the listeners out there, if you can imagine, instead of just a search engine, sort of three things that exist in an ecosystem. You have the real world, you have the digital world, and you have a search engine. And the digital world is fascinating because to me, it's simply a mirror or a digital footprint of the real world. You know, just like we have people and places and restaurants and museums and things in the real world, we have all those things in the digital footprint represented by a website or social media profile or a Twitter profile or something digitally, a video. And then we have search engines that try to help us bridge the gap. The search engine is what helps us as human beings bridge the gap between our real world and our digital reality or our digital footprint. And so when you step back and you look at that whole map, that brings into clarity a lot of frustration points that I think you see SEOs get into these circular arguments where some SEOs will say, do link building, it works. And some other SEOs will say, don't do link building, it doesn't work. And some SEOs might say, well, you know, black hat's bad or black hat's good. And you get into these arguments because I think we're not seeing things in the holistic view. And so when you have a search ecosystem as your mental model, now you can step back and you can say, okay, well, information passes between all of these channels. So for one example, when a brand, let's say a big brand like Coca-Cola or McDonald's or somebody, when they do something in the real world, stuff ends up in the digital world just as a consequence of that. Like if you hold an event or you run an ad on television or you put a billboard up and it gets a lot of attention, all that stuff ends up in the digital world in the form of social media posts, links, press mentions, etc. And so when you look at a specific SEO tactic, like something we might call unlinked mentions, that means monitoring for when your brand is mentioned and then reaching out to those sites to say, hey, you mentioned us, but you didn't give us a link. Can you attribute us with a link there? And that's a form of link building, let's say. When you can understand that the flow of that information has been something happened in the real world and then it went to the digital world, let's seize that moment and try to capitalize on that. And one other example is the way I explained approaching keyword research before is I view Google as just a big database, right? They have a database of everything human beings have searched for since they've been collecting that information. And so when I do keyword research, I'm thinking I'm going from the real world and I'm just accessing the search engine and their database for information to understand what human beings are searching on search engines. And that's the perspective that I have. That's why for me, it's a search, a keyword is not just a number, right? It's not just some metric. It actually does represent humans. So for me, it's really helped to have this, what I think of as an accurate map or mental model of what SEO, search ecosystem, actually is.
Lovely. Okay. I think this also goes down to your earlier idea of looking at SEO very holistically. You know, when you look at it holistically, then you're looking at your ecosystem better. You're looking at the real world, the digital world, and the search world. But, you know, typically SEO experts, when they're just looking at getting better on Google search, they're probably just looking at the search world of things and then seeing how can I get better. I think this goes back to looking at it holistically.
Yeah, and I think that's where you can also, you can realize that in some cases, SEO, you don't need SEO. There's been people that have contacted me looking for SEO help. Maybe oftentimes it's a small business. And sometimes I've told people you don't need to be doing SEO right now. You should focus on other things. Like just, I've told people when they call me, you need a better website. Like you're not going to get anywhere unless you have a better design, better functionality, better UX, better content. Like do all that first and come back to me in 6 months. So I think when you look at it holistically, you can decide to not even do SEO at all.
Right. Great. Okay. So you have interviewed close to 100 SEO experts. Can you tell me something unique that you've learned from them? A unique learning that you can recollect? You know, any one of them?
Yeah. Can I give you three quick ones? They're very specific.
Of course, yes.
Okay, so one is I interviewed a lady by the name of Vivica Von Rosen. This was like almost 2 years ago, and she's a LinkedIn expert. She told me exactly how to optimize your LinkedIn profile, and I encourage your listeners to go check out that episode. Just Vivica Von Rosen, Evolving SEO. You can Google it. And I set up my LinkedIn profile properly the way she told me to like a year ago, and I've gotten the best leads from LinkedIn in the last year, and I think a lot of it's because of that. So that's one, just optimizing your LinkedIn profile. Two is actually a philosophical insight. It's by a guy named Corbett Barr. I interviewed him about a year and a half ago, and he said something interesting to me. I said, Corbett, how did you meet these like big influencers like Pat Flynn or like these people that have, you know, huge, huge audiences? What did you do to connect with them? And he said, I actually met them before they were well known. I met them when they were the underdog, and it flipped around my whole paradigm where like, for anybody out there listening that's trying to connect with like influencers like a Gary Vaynerchuk or like, you know, somebody like big like that, the next influencer could be sitting right next to you. They could be sitting at your job, or that you could be working with them if you have clients. So I think to think about, make connections with people that are, let's say, so to speak, on your level, because they could one day be the big influencer that you might know. And then finally, third, it's very tactical. Technical SEO tip, Jamie Alberico told this to me recently. If you go into your log files, you can see the referrer sources of the websites that have referred Google's search bot to get to your content. So what I mean by that in layman's terms is if Google crawled a website that has a link to your website on it, and then they followed that link to your website, that will show up in your log files. And that can be used tactically for a lot of particular insights. Like one might say like, oh, if you're building all these links, you're getting links, you can see if actually Google is actually crawling those links and getting to your website. Because if they're not, I suspect that those links might not be counting as much as you think they are. So it's a great way to sort of validate maybe some of the external links that you have and see how Google is discovering your site.
Oh, lovely. I think there are three really useful insights. You know, talking about big people sitting next to you, I have Shruti sitting next to me here, and I'm sure she's the next big thing.
Well, I have to say her organization and preparation for the interview was top notch. I've been interviewed by a lot of people, and it was definitely one of the best.
Okay, this is totally going into the podcast. Right, okay. Featured snippets, that's something new in 2018, and a lot of SEO is riding on it. What do you think are the new trends other than that in 2018 that you see?
Well, for search, there's always some kind of new trend. I mean, for me, the biggest thing is really thinking about platform SEO, meaning how do you do SEO in YouTube? That's been something I've been focusing more and more of my attention on. Second biggest search engine, huge way to grow a business or grow a brand or get attention. Amazon SEO, you know, how do you rank your products in Amazon? Yelp SEO. So for me, I think, you know, this isn't like a new thing like featured snippet. It's not like a new thing Google's doing, but it's the idea of, okay, if things are too competitive for you in Google, and again, this is thinking holistically, well, I had a client actually where I did a little optimization for Bing because I saw they were getting a better conversion rate in Bing, even though their traffic is like 20% of what it is for Google. So I think, you know, we all make the mistake of thinking Google is synonymous with search engine, but there's a lot of other search engines out there. A lot of people like do Etsy SEO. Musicians I know do SoundCloud SEO to get their tracks to show up better in SoundCloud. So for me, that's what I've been focusing on specifically the most is YouTube SEO. And one really interesting little hack that I can give your listeners that I heard somebody mention in a VidCon video is that if you have a YouTube channel and you're getting some, you know, you're getting a decent amount of views, maybe a few hundred or a couple thousand views on some of your videos, go into your YouTube analytics and look at YouTube analytics will show you the when you, let me try to explain this. So you know the featured or recommended videos on the right hand side when you're watching a video on YouTube?
Yeah.
YouTube will show you the video that referenced to your video, if I'm explaining that correctly. So, for example, I saw that I was getting a lot of views because people were watching a video on SEMrush, like SEMrush 101. They saw my SEMrush tutorial in the recommended videos on the right, and they were clicking on that to get to my video. That is the biggest source of views in YouTube, bigger than search and bigger than external sources. It's when you get recommended on the right-hand side. So very long-winded, I apologize, roundabout way of surfacing this tip here is to look at those other videos that are sending you traffic and look at the channels that most send you views and then optimize and create content for their audiences. So tangibly speaking, I should be thinking about creating more content for the type of audience that's watching SEMrush videos. And then what's going to happen is YouTube's just going to start recommending me more alongside more of those videos. And I'm going to naturally siphon off a lot of that traffic and views. So when you're doing this, try to choose channels that have videos that have a high amount of views, right? Because if you're recommended alongside a video that has a million views, well, that's probably like, you know, a couple thousand eyeballs on your video a month that have the chance to click on that video. So YouTube's a fascinating landscape, and that's just one way to – what's one little tip or hack there. But that's sort of what I'm paying attention to in SEO that I think is a little off the path.
Right. Okay. So now let's have something that we call the rapid fire round. We're going to ask you a couple of questions, and the answer that you have on the top of the head, you know, just shoot it out.
Great.
Okay. What's your favorite SEO resource? It can be a blog, it can be a podcast, it can be a website. What's your favorite?
First one that comes to mind is blindfiveyearold.com. It's the blog of AJ Cohn. I think he has one of the most brilliant and interesting and unique minds in SEO. So blindfiveyearold.com.
Right. Okay. What are you currently reading, and what's your favorite book?
The 80-20 Principle is my favorite book. I'm currently reading nothing, really, because I don't really read a whole lot anymore. But if I'm being totally like accurate here, I did just purchase two books of walks you can do around New York City and sites you can see in New York City. So I live 3 hours from New York City. It is one of my absolute favorite places on the planet to go to. And so when I get the chance, I drive down for the day and I try to walk around and just take pictures and discover stuff. So I guess technically that's what I'm reading.
Okay. What are the three tools you can't live without for SEO?
Goodness. SEMrush, Screaming Frog, and Keywords Everywhere.
Keywords Everywhere.
Yeah, it's a free plugin for Chrome, and it gives you keyword search volume in Google as you're searching, and it gives you search volume embedded in a lot of the popular tools like Search Console and Analytics and Moz and things like that. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. Keywords Everywhere.
Lovely. Okay. So let's imagine this. If you're a new entrepreneur who just wrote his first blog, what would you do to get the traffic and readership?
So I would actually choose the topic first based upon keyword research and topic research, what I spoke to earlier. I would choose something that's very niche and long tail, because as a new site, you're going to need to choose something that's very low competition in order to rank for that. But I firmly believe that anybody starting out, no matter what topic you're writing about, you can find something, even if it's top of funnel and it doesn't drive sales, you can find something that will align with the people you're trying to connect with. And that can rank in search. Quick example is, like, I wrote a post about how I moved my business to Worcester, Massachusetts. I didn't intend for this to happen, but I rank, or maybe still today, I don't know, ranked for moving to Worcester. And I got tons of people commenting and emailing me that were also considering moving to Worcester for work or for just for in general. And so it's been interesting how a post like that has allowed me to just meet all these random people that are, you know, moving to my area.
Right. Okay. Okay. The last question. We do this all the time at Fresh Chat, right? When a new person joins the team, we ask them something weird about them. This is part of the onboarding for them, right? What's one thing that's weird about you?
I don't know how weird it is, but for about 2 years, I drove a diesel Volkswagen on vegetable oil. And I can expand on that if you like. So I bought a used diesel Golf. And bought a kit at a company, I don't know if they're still around, it was called Grease Car, they're out here in Massachusetts. And I had a mechanic install the kit, it converts your car. So basically you go around to restaurants, and so I was a gigging musician at the time. So literally everywhere I had a gig, I'd go play the gig, drive around back, grab their used vegetable oil, then take it to my dad's studio where I set up a a makeshift filtration system where you basically send the oil through like a series of three filters that would filter the oil so it was clean enough to put into the second tank, which sat in your trunk in the Volkswagen. And then when you went to drive, you'd wait till the car warmed up. As soon as the thermostat hits right dead center, you flip a switch, and then the car's running on veggie oil 100% until like 5 minutes before you go to stop the car. Then you purge the lines of the veggie oil with diesel, and then that purges the lines, and then you're back on diesel for the last few minutes. So I could drive about 1,500 miles on one tank of diesel when I was doing that. It was incredible.
Wow, that's something.
Dan is an SEO expert and a musician. Before wrapping up the show, we're going to play a music for you produced by him. You can check out more of his music on his SoundCloud page. Thank you for listening to Mind the Gap. Subscribe to our podcast at freshchat.com/mindthegap. You can check out our upcoming episodes and ask questions to our guest by sending an audio message there. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with the world. See you guys soon.